Welcome back to Middle Age to Mediocre. We're back. We had mic issues, and we don't have them anymore because I did my fucking job.
You did your fucking job.
I had one job.
Is it that hard?
I don't know what I did even.
I mean, for me to not do my job here, I would have to come over and forget how to talk. So it's easy for me to speak about it.
You have an easy job to do.
I do. What? That's crazy.
But I fixed it. So I think maybe we're sounding better. We'll find out.
All right, yeah. We'll see.
I don't know what I did. I just did some things, and
good
it worked.
Work.
Yeah.
So you Control-Alt-Deleted it.
I did something.
Good job.
Yeah, we missed 2 weeks, I think.
2 weeks. You were sick 1 week, and then last week you couldn't do your fucking job.
I couldn't do my fucking job. But we're back. So this is the last part of our exploration of the Unsolved Mysteries Iceberg. We thought we'd be done with this.
Yeah, I thought I put this in my rear view window.
Yeah.
Window?
I put
in
this,
my mirror.
I put this right in my rear.
Rear view mirror!
Whatever.
Whatever.
You have your ways, I have mine.
We have a new video out.
We have a new video out on TikTok. It's a test run.
Is that on YouTube too, or just TikTok?
It's just TikTok right now. Okay. I'll put it on the YouTubes.
After we do a real one.
We do have a YouTube as well that's got all of our podcasts on it.
Smash that like button. Hammer the subscribe button.
Click that notification bell so you know when new posts are coming. So go check out that. We have a test run of a couple shows we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
We're just working on getting the lighting and everything set up. So those will be fun.
Sounds like it. You sold me.
But, I mean, I got to put up with you to do it.
How do you do it? I don't know.
But,
man.
Yeah, today we're going to do... I was going to make the whole episode, like, mind-blowing things.
Yeah.
But there was only a couple that, like, I could really even wrap my head around.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know what? I don't want to try to even say all the big words in these. So
I don't blame you.
We got a mixed bag for the ending here.
And I got records.
Yeah.
World records.
Yeah, world records.
I've been listening to records. I have all the Guinness books on tape.
And you had something pretty interesting to talk about last time when I couldn't do my fucking job right, so we didn't get to talk about it.
I did?
But you did a very interesting comment.
Oh, yeah.
So
adult toy bingo.
Yeah, you...
Not the adult toys that we normally...
No, not like our kind of adult toys.
No.
The real grown-up toys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you told me, because you asked if we could record a little bit later in the day because you had a dildo party to go to. And I thought this was like just some, you know.
Yeah, my sister hosts dildo parties at her house.
Yeah, like people have those, right?
Yeah,
so I thought you were doing something like that.
Yeah.
So then you come over, though, and no, you were doing a comedy show at a dildo party.
Bingo.
Dildo bingo thing. And how'd it go?
Oh, about how it sounds.
You said there were like
200 people.
That's insane.
For adult toy bingo.
Yeah. And they just had them all over the place, right?
It was a whole... Yeah, well, there's a table. It was at the table right beside me when I was doing comedy. I did 30 minutes. There was a dildo there bigger than my arm. It was a little bit off-putting. At the end, I got to tell everyone, because I did this before the bingo... So I got to tell everyone to enjoy bingo and then go fuck themselves.
Yeah. That was polite of you, I think.
Yeah. And I said, I'm just in a room full of magicians because all this shit's going to be disappearing into their cavities.
Now, were the bingo like daubers? Were they dildos too?
No, they were just regular boring daubers.
Oh, they really should have
went. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. If you're going to do
it. That's
what
I thought. Do it big.
Do it right.
Yeah.
Use that big old
if you're
arm.
Listening, Kyle.
Use that big old arm dildo. Dip it in
yeah, another one the next day. And it didn't, I don't think it did quite as well as the 200, but I think it still was pretty packed.
A lot of horny people that love bingo in this town. Yeah. So, all right, well, that's.
I was born with sex toys. They're called my hands. I don't need.
Well, you're not very adventurous.
No.
Explorative.
You keep trying. You
keep
trying.
Trying,
and I'm just like, no.
I keep pulling out my Twitch ass from under the bed, and you're like, no.
What?
Not this time. Maybe next time.
Maybe.
But, so that was...
That's comedy.
That's a definitely interesting video.
Well, that's the last comedy set I ever do. I have nothing else booked moving forward.
Well, maybe you need to start looking into adult bingo shows.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm the guy.
I do it. So I've done Christmas parades now
specialty.
And adult toy bingo.
Yeah. I don't know, man. You're exploring the comedy universe out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So more power to you.
Getting in it.
Now, what about these world records you
got? Yeah, well, I got the 2024 Guinness Book of Records.
Those aren't even out yet.
I don't even know how that's a thing, but that's what it was. Yeah. We went to the library, me and Lily.
Okay.
She got a video game, because you can get video games at the
library. Oh, yeah, you can get everything.
Yeah. Not adult toys.
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
I mean, if you find where I left
so,
them, you can have them.
So I leafed through the book and I found some records I think you and I could break.
Okay.
You want to get into those?
Yeah.
All right. The first one involves a hot dog.
Okay.
It's not eating the hot dog because that's boring.
Yeah.
I mean, I could eat all the hot dogs in the world in a second. But this is the longest throwing catch of a hot dog into a bun. Now, they call it a hot dog sausage, but I think it's just a hot dog.
Right.
You know? But it was a July 14th, 2022 catcher David Rush and thrower Russell Phillips, which you seem like a catcher to me.
Yeah, I'm a, I can do whatever.
whatever needs to be done.
Whatever needs to be done.
Okay. So maybe you'll throw it, I'll catch. So both these guys are USA. They can move it up.
Of course the hot dog.
Everywhere else in the world is like, we're going to eat that hot dog. We're starving to death.
Americans are like, how far can we throw it?
I wonder how far, what the record is for throwing it and catch it in your mouth.
Now, so you told me about this one last time, yeah. And I thought about it, and I don't know if, like, there's rules, like, if you have to find rules, because if it's not against the rules, or if this is what these guys did,
yeah.
I think the best way to go for this is to freeze the hot dog.
Oh.
Get yourself a good, solid...
Or just a cold one, not even for just straight out the
fridge. I think to be able to toss...
That can be dangerous. 55.8 yards.
So a little over half a football field.
Yeah.
You give me a frozen hot dog, I can get it down that field.
But that sounds dangerous. Frozen dog, yeah, I mean, hitting you in your eye.
You got to be a good catcher.
You do. But yeah, they threw 55.8 yards.
I think you said the only rules are...
It has to be 5.5 to 7 inches long.
Yeah.
Which is a good rule for
games. Says nothing about frozen.
Yeah. Don't mess with anything that's not at least 5.5 inches long.
I've always said that. Yeah.
It's tattooed on my lower back.
Oh, I need to tattoo it.
And, yeah. And it says you can use vegan hot dogs, too.
Okay.
But let me tell you about vegan hot dogs. That don't fly with me.
Yeah.
Because you're throwing the hot dog.
Right.
And the vegan dog doesn't fly with me.
Wow. So that was... Did you tell that at the bingo party?
No.
That's good.
No. So I think that's what we could work on.
I think at least.
Some of these are a little out of our wheelhouse. I still wrote them down because I thought they were interesting. But that's definitely one.
Like I said, I think if we look into the rules of this...
Frozen.
If it's not against the rules to freeze it...
I really want to take a bite out of it after I catch it.
Why don't you go for it?
Who talked about that? People will pull a hot dog out of the fridge and just eat it raw.
That's the grossest thing
in the fucking world.
But, yeah, because I think if you try to throw one that's not frozen, you're going to have breakage.
Yeah.
I don't know how
you... Because it's going to wobble.
I don't know how you put force behind it without... Because you have to, like, almost open palm, throw it so you're not, like... You don't have, like, a point that you're holding onto that would break off.
See, I was thinking in my head, I would, like, kind of go about halfway up the wiener.
Yeah.
And then I would, like, get a good running start. Don't hold it too hard.
So, like, javelin it?
No, I would go underhand.
You're never making it underhanded.
Oh, see, we got to do this.
Yeah, you're never making it underhanded.
I think underhand's the only way.
No. Because
you're going to get it so high, then it's going to just keep going on the way down.
Because you're
going
to get it so high that it doesn't have anywhere to go forward. It's going to come back right back down.
All right.
You arch it.
Shut this shit off. Let's go.
You got to arch that thing.
Let's get breaking the PHS at a local high school football field so we can throw
We're
a hot dog.
We're setting records here. Yeah. Leave us alone.
So that's the first one.
I think we could maybe do this one.
I think we could, too.
Yeah, I think we could try this one.
And I'm working on the next one. Okay. The next one is the longest chest hair.
Gross.
Which is a guy from Italy named Vittorio Lulo.
Is it his only chest hair?
I don't know. That's a good question. But it's 11.10 inches long.
Holy shit.
That's a lot of chest hair.
Yeah. Why would you do that?
How do you grow it?
How do you?
I've never cut my chest hair. It is just the way it is. It's probably a good.
I mean, yeah.
Half an inch.
Yeah, I mean, mine has grown to the point it grows to.
Yeah,
that is where it's at. I don't know.
I'm growing my hair out, but I've never. I'm not like, oh, I'm gonna grow my chest
and
hair
like,
out.
Like, if that guy only has the one that's growing out,
yeah.
Then like,
11, almost 12 inches.
So imagine if he could get the whole thing out, and he has like a mullet on his chest.
Yeah,
that'd be
cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
So if you're out there listening, Victoria, let us know. This one we could do too. The next one, longest beard, October 22nd, Sarwan Sings from Canada had his beard measured at 8 feet 4 inches.
That's insane.
My beard, I just cut mine last weekend.
I mean, mine gets...
You're probably good half a 4 inches or
mine
so.
Mine goes a little bit further down than this if I let it grow, but yeah. Then it's... Yeah, it's
too
not going to get 8 feet.
The youngest beard ever is Katie Holmes married to Tom Cruise.
Topical. Very topical.
Thank you. Longest mullet.
Yeah.
I can work on this. Okay. I'm growing my hair.
You are.
You see it.
I see it.
Don't look at the bald spot. Big Rich Price from, you've guessed it, Ohio.
Yep.
USA.
Sport, Ohio. No answer choice on this.
He has a mullet of 3 foot 3 inches.
Because some of you are going to say, well, what about Kentucky? It could have been Kentucky.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Kentucky has respectable mullets,
yeah,
and they take them serious. They're not doing it for records. They're doing it for the love of the game.
Yeah. And this guy hit with his mullet. You're probably thinking, wow, 3 foot 3 mullet. He's probably the king of the mullets. Well, he's not. He did make it to the final in 2021. He made it to the final 25 of the main event.
Okay.
M-A-N-E
event. I'm with you.
But he only finished 13th, proving that size isn't everything.
Now, how does he finish that low in the king of the mullets, but he has the record?
Because it's the longest, but what if he doesn't, like, put any show and
so
pop on
it? The king of the mullet
it?
Has to have, like, a...
I would, yeah, it's probably, like, the volume.
It's more like the wrestling of the... mullet world. Like,
sure.
It's more like show.
There's entertainment value.
There's entertainment
to it,
value.
Yeah.
Okay.
He probably just like.
It's not a pure sport.
He probably doesn't even wash his mullet. I don't know.
Probably not.
If you're listening, fucking Nick, let
don't,
us know. Oh, that's
reach out
not
to
Nick.
Us.
Big Rich Price, if you're listening.
I'd rather you not reach out to us.
Send me a picture.
Send you all your pictures. Whatever pictures you want.
Next one, we can work on this. The fastest time to remove 5 Jenga blocks with your tongue. The record is 55.52 seconds by Nick Strollbarrel from USA. He set the record in London.
Okay.
Because that's the block-licking capital.
Yeah, it is.
In February 20th, 2023. But Nick has a bit of an advantage. He's also has the world record for longest tongue at 3.97 inches from lip to tip. That might be my favorite way to measure something. Lip to tip.
Yeah. I'm Nick. I have the longest tongue.
I'm at 4 inches, lip to tip.
So it was 5 blocks.
Yeah, 5
okay.
blocks.
Okay. I thought when you first told me this one, I thought you said 1.
Nah.
Because I was like, I could do 1 in that amount of time.
But like you said, I still feel like you could do 5 faster because all you got to do is the ones on the edges.
See, if you hit the edges. I feel like it's possible.
It's a weird thing to do at a party, but...
It is.
Next time someone breaks out Jenga at a party, I'm going to be like, watch out!
I'm setting records!
Yeah!
That's going to be start being our excuse for everything we do.
This could be one for us. The tallest house of cards built in 8 hours by Tian Ru of China. He built a house 50 levels tall on November 10, 2022. It reached 11 feet.
I can't even build like a little tiny one out of cards.
That's probably more than one deck.
I would say.
Me and Lily like to build card houses. I can get about 3 or 4 levels.
Oh, yeah, I can't do that.
But, man, that's a lot. And then, like, just every... Oh, that would just be so nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I can't play Jenga because it's too stressful.
No,
I can't imagine trying to build...
Tongue. Yeah.
I can't imagine trying to build a stack of, a house of cards that tall.
Yeah. I wonder... I'd like to see a picture of what that looked like. All right, next we're on to the most spins of a hula hoop on 1 foot while doing a headstand.
That's so
in
much
one
stuff.
Minute. I
so many,
know.
So many things happening.
From India, Jay Jessica rotated a hoop 213 times on her foot while perched on her head.
Good job, Jay Jessica.
I think it's Jay Jessica.
Whatever.
In July of 2020. So that record stood for 3 years.
I couldn't
now.
Do many. I couldn't do most parts of that.
Yeah,
let alone combine.
Yeah, I know. Spin on one leg, upside down. Now, the most hula hoops while just hanging upside down on your hips.
Yeah.
Is 23 in 1 minute.
Yeah, and even that seems.
I guess it's 23 until it stops.
Seems like it'd be so hard to get the motion going.
She did it in Denver, of course.
Of course. Well, it's a higher elevation, so.
Oh, a little bit of cheating.
Yeah, a little bit of performance-enhancing air up there.
Have you ever solved the Rubik's Cube?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
I've never solved the Rubik's Cube. My nephew, like, watches YouTube videos about it, and he's good. He's not one of these, like, kids you see on TV. All those Rubik's Cube competitions that you watch.
Oh, yeah.
They solve. It's like this kid here, he solved the Rubik's Cube while pogo sticking in 9.61 seconds.
While pogo sticking? And wait.
Zia Yang from China set that record in 2021.
He solved a Rubik's Cube while pogo sticking in how many?
9.613 seconds.
What the hell?
Are you just squeezing the pogo stick with your legs and using both your hands? Because I've seen them solved with one hand. I've seen them solved when people solve it behind their backs. I've watched some Rubik's Cube videos.
Apparently so.
I can't do it, but I'll watch videos of it.
Did you ever watch the Rubik's Cube cartoon?
What?
There was a kids cartoon back in the 80s called Rubik's. And it was a little alien Rubik's Cube guy that could grant wishes and things.
What?
Oh, yeah.
How did I miss that? Yeah,
real show.
We might as well do this one. The farthest thrown flying disc, or frisbee, is a 1,108 feet. David Wiggins Jr., USA, did this in 2016. Bystanders were quoted as saying, bruh, no way. No way, bruh. We watched a video of this.
No, we watched
a
video
of this.
It
was the windiest fucking... It was in the desert where they do like the world... Where they do, like, let's break the land speed record or whatever.
Yeah, I would like to call an asterisk on this one. Because the wind was fucking crazy. The wind carried that thing.
500.
At least.
Of
yeah.
those feet. Yeah. But he set the record. Next one is another throw. The furthest throw of a washing machine.
This is insane.
Johan M. Perkerunen,
big ass
from Sweden,
big ass strongest man competitor.
Who watched this video too? He threw a washing machine 14 feet 7 inches, February 15, 2022, in Italy, and his friends never asked him to help move again.
I should have done that when I was helping move people.
I set this record.
Now we watched the video on this one too, and. We noticed that these do not look like normal washing machines.
Yeah.
They were a little small.
They were.
Which at first we were like, well.
But they still had all the guts in them, so I'm sure they still probably weigh a couple
hundred
pounds.
But they looked kind of economy size. Like.
Yeah, like something in Japan where they have smaller
Like the washer I have, you're not throwing that thing
The washer I have is older than both of us combined.
And so. it's going to be heavy as shit.
It was built into the house. Yeah. Like, it's just, I sleep in it. So, yeah, it's heavy.
Things built back then, they used the heaviest materials they could find.
That's why they lost, though.
Yeah.
They don't build them like they used to, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay. We are middle-aged and mediocre.
And this is the last one here. This is definitely one we got.
Okay.
This definitely. Is the longest marathon on a swing. Richard Todd, 51 years old, from the UK, swung for 36 hours and 32 minutes.
Just swinging.
It's like, I don't know if he's allowed to eat while swinging. If he can, like, if he's allowed to use the restroom and it just goes.
Big, swinging. Big fan of John Anderson. He's just a swinging.
That was the Ronnie Crawdad song.
Yeah, it was John Anderson classic.
Hell yeah.
So, 36 hours and how?
36 hours, 32 minutes. 36 and a half hours.
Yeah, 36 and a half hours. Just, is somebody pushing him?
I don't think so.
Because then that should be the record, too. Like, I pushed this fucker.
The guy wants his name in there, too. Yeah. And Richard Todd's like, oh, I'm the one who did it. No, I think it's self-propelled swinging. Marathon swinging.
I feel like your legs would get tired as shit after a little while.
Would they?
I mean, you kick your legs out, you bring them back, kick them out, bring them back.
Richard was quoted as saying, I love this quote. I was the fittest I had been in my life. Yeah. So why not? And the kids were quoted afterwards as saying, "Oh, finally, my turn."
what an asshole stealing a swing for that long.
Imagine being a kid, you're there, you wait for like, he's like, no, I'm trying to set a world record. You're like, what?
What?
I don't understand any of his words. I just want to swing.
I just want to swing.
He's like, no, kid, I'm training
this.
This
is serious. I'm in the best shape of my life, kid.
You wouldn't get it.
And then, like, they leave and they come back the next day, and that motherfucker is still swinging.
There.
Yeah. All
right. Well, we're going to try the hot dog one, I think, for sure.
I think so.
Before we get started with the episode, I do want to mention there's an app out there called Good Pods. All one word, GOODPODS. We are on there, and we have created a little playlist that you guys can check out if you want. It's got some of...
check it out!
It's got some shows that are similar to ours. I called it the best podcast for middle-aged and mediocre nerds. And it features podcasts. It features our podcast, of course, along with... Dueling Ogres, our friends from the Dueling Ogres.
Oh, yeah,
yep. The Source Material, our friends from Source Material. The Bad Taste Video Podcast.
I'll fight all those people.
The VHS Strikes Back Podcast.
Okay. They're coming back.
The Saturday Morning Rewind. It's a podcast about Saturday morning cartoons. So, yeah, if you go to Good Pods.
And then we have our book friends, too.
We have our Bandcamp.
Bandcamp,
yep. B-A-N-N-E-D.
Love those guys.
We'll be working with them again soon, hopefully. But yeah, go to get Good Pod or Good Pods. Download the app and follow us on there. Check out our list. Make sure you share and all that stuff. But
Mel's a frozen hot dog.
What's that?
I said Mel's a frozen hot dog too.
Mel's a frozen hot dog.
Mail us.
Oh, mail us a frozen hot dog.
You've reached your limit with me today. We've been out hitting flea markets and stuff, and I think you've just. You reached your limit.
So that's very fitting because our very first topic in this episode today of the Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, can I say one more thing real fast?
Sure.
We're talking about the Axeman of New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
We're watching me and my girlfriend. We're going through all the American Horror Story seasons. We're up to season 3, The Coven. And there's a storyline in there where he's a ghost. And like they read his stuff. Was like, if you're playing jazz, and I won't come. Like they read, and I was like, I know about that.
We already knew that.
Yeah. So I thought about you, buddy.
All right. Well, cool. I'm glad I can introduce you to things that you can point out later and go, that's the thing that
TV,
we talked about.
Yeah, TV made it real. I was like, I saw it. It's on TV.
All right. So up first in our list today is, like I said, this is a good one for the conversation we were having about how can I put up with you. This is the paradox of tolerance.
Ah.
So the paradox of tolerance states that if a society is tolerant without limit, its ability to be tolerant is eventually ceased or destroyed by the intolerant. Karl Popper described it as the seemingly self-contradictory idea that in order to maintain a tolerant society, the society must retain the right to be intolerant of intolerance. Popper specified that intolerance not to be tolerated involves a refusal to engage in rational argument. So what this is saying is, if we want to live in a tolerant society, which most people do,
yeah.
You want to tolerate everything.
I try.
But then you have to also tolerate the intolerant. And if you can't tolerate the intolerant, you don't live in a tolerant society.
So you have to tolerate me.
So there's no possible way that a society can be tolerant because there's always going to be those that disagree with you. And you're going to either have to tolerate them and let them keep doing their thing, which is how we get Nazis and Donald Trump. Or, this is there's a pretty good part in here about unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them.
I feel so high right now. I'm not at all, but this is what it was. Now I remember what getting high is like.
So,
like this.
If you use the Nazis as the example here, everybody wants to, you always hear like, well, let's take America and the way it's right now, you know.
Say something bad about America.
Everybody has freedom of speech.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to be tolerant. No more cancel culture. You need to tolerate everything. So, well, then if you just keep tolerating those that want to take away abortion rights and, you know, women's rights and minority voting, all that stuff. If you tolerate that, then it becomes the norm, and now you live in a shittier society because you tolerated that.
Yeah,
but
tolerable.
To stop the intolerant, you have to become yourself intolerant. And that's the paradox.
Bro.
We should have. I'll never sleep again. So, you know, just and then this is why I didn't do a lot of these, because I was like, there's a lot that I don't. There's only a couple I did here. So then the second one is the mind-body problem. And this one, the mind-body problem is a philosophical problem concerning the relationship between thought and consciousness in the human mind and the body. So it's not obvious how the concept of the mind and the concept of the body relate. For example, feelings of sadness, which are mental events, cause people to cry, which is a physical state of the body. Finding a joke funny, a mental event, causes one to laugh, another bodily state. Feelings of pain are in the mind, cause avoidance behaviors in the body, and so on. Similarly, changing the chemistry of the body and the brain specifically via drugs such as antipsychotics, SSRIs, or alcohol can change one's state of mind in non-trivial ways. Alternatively, therapeutic interventions like cognitive behavioral therapy can change cognition in ways that have downstream effects on the bodily health. In general, the existence of these mind-body connections seem unproblematic. Issues arise, however, once one considers what exactly we should make of these relations from a metaphysical or scientific perspective. Such reflections quickly raise a number of questions like, are the mind and the body two distinct entities or one single entity? If the mind and body are two distinct entities, do the two of them casually interact? Is it possible for these two distinct entities to causally interact? What is the nature of this interaction? Can this interaction ever be an object of empirical study? So, like, I always, I had this crackpot theory years ago about, so, like, pain is just, pain is in the mind, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's a feeling that your body then sends down to, you know, your brain sends down to, like, the nerves and things and says, hey, this hurts.
Yeah.
But if you just... So that would mean, in theory, you should be able to ignore that.
Yeah.
Because it's not a real thing. It's a signal and an impulse.
Yeah.
So you should just be able to go, nah, I'm just going to...
Like, have you seen that video where, like, they put, like, a fake hand where, like, the and the hammer...
And the hammer.
But the
and
person,
your
hand's
on the other side of the curtain.
Yeah. But, like, you see that hand, you think it's your hand, they do it, and people wince and stuff.
And you can't,
and, Now, Joe Liss has been talking about this a lot in his podcast. There's a book, I can't remember the name of it. But he basically talks about that. We're like, yeah, some pain is real, but some of the pain, too, is just, like, the idea of pain.
That's, like, I mean, when I was wrestling, there was definitely a lot of things that would happen that would, you know, be painful as shit, and you would just have to go, yeah, I'm not feeling that right now.
Yeah.
Just ignore that for now. We'll get back to it. So, then I saw a video the other day of a guy that, he wrecked his car and it burst into flames.
Hmm.
And then he gets out of the car. Dude is like, I mean, on fire. Just so much fire. His whole body, just so much fire. And he's like, the people filming it, the people have their phones out filming it as he walks back towards their car. And he's just like, kind of calmly walking towards them. And then sort of just leans against the side rail, the guardrail. And people run out and start like, you know, hitting him with things and trying to put it out. And so he's got to be covered in burns. I mean, his whole body. And he's just sort of chilling, waiting on the EMTs. And I'm just like, yeah, see, that guy is just like, nah, I ain't dealing with this pain.
That's adrenaline, too, I think.
Probably. But I would think fire would be a hard one to...
Joe had another example on his. He mentioned on a couple podcasts. I think it's in the book. It was about a construction worker who stepped on a nail, and the nail came up through his boot. And he was just beside himself in pain, just screaming, yelling. You know, this nail came up through his fucking foot.
Yeah.
And, like, they called an ambulance, got him to the hospital. They were finally able to, like, get the shoe cut off around or whatever. And the nail actually came up between his toes and didn't touch.
But he was freaking out because?
Because he saw it, and his brain was saying, that nail just went through your foot. So his foot was in so much pain, and it was all, but it was just all in his head. Because he just saw the nail coming up through his foot. He was, you know... His brain was, like, sending the signals of, like, hey, our fucking, we got nailed through our foot, dummy. So he was just in all the pain, like, writhing around and everything. And
see, that's why I think I don't have that as much. Because when I was a kid, I was running around out in the woods, and I stepped on a nail that was on a board, coming up through a board.
Yeah.
I stepped on a nail, middle of my foot. It went up through my foot. It didn't hurt. It freaked me out a little bit, but it didn't hurt, and I... had to stand on it with my other foot and pull my foot out. And then when I came home, I told my mom, and she's like, We are going to get a tetanus shot now. But it didn't. I mean, it didn't hurt.
My dad just told me a story about this. It was my friend though, when I was growing up in South Carolina. He came home from work, and me and one of my friends from the neighborhood were like playing in the backyard, and he like saw my friend limping. And I don't remember this, but my dad remembers. He swears it happened. He's like, "Joel, what's wrong with your friend?" Like, he stepped on a board with a nail on it, but we just kept playing.
Yeah.
And then dad was like, "Well, let's take that out." That's it. He took the nail board off a nail, you know, like bandaged it up and sent the kid home.
Yeah, I have like tattoos. You know, they don't bother me at all. I ran an arrow into my ribs once.
Uh-huh.
When I was a kid, I was running with an arrow, and the bottom of it hit the ground.
Yeah.
And it turned it up, and I ran right in.
Oh,
and I went through my side. And I just kind of, like, stood there looking at it, and I looked at my dad and my grandpa, and I was like, my eyes were really wide, and they were like, "You got to get that out of you." So, like, we just pulled it out.
Yeah.
But, like, I didn't – I have, like, a weird – Tim used to always say I had, like, a Wolverine's healing ability because I was just sort of, like, couldn't – I didn't really – nowadays, though, like, as I got older,
yeah,
pain is very much more – it's much more annoying.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So I know there's different levels.
I think there is a connection between body and brain, because I think when you work out and you exercise, you feel better mentally.
Right.
So that's my connection.
So like endorphins and things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. So the last of the little like
ones that make me feel dumb.
Mind puzzles.
Okay.
This is Kafka's toxin puzzle. Kafka's toxin puzzle is a thought experiment about the possibility of forming. This is you gotta really wrap your head around this one. The possibility of forming an intention to perform an act, which, following from reason, is an action one would not actually perform. It was presented by moral and political philosopher Gregory...
You can give me the rest of the day, and I could not figure out what the fuck you
I'll break
said.
It down for
okay.
you. Gregory S. Kafka in The Toxin Puzzle, and grew out of his work in Deterrence Theory and Mutual Assured Destruction. His original version of the puzzle goes like this. An eccentric billionaire places before you a vial of toxin that, if you drink it, will make you painfully ill for a day, but it will not threaten your life or have any lasting effects. The billionaire will pay you $1 million tomorrow morning if, at midnight tonight, you intend to drink the toxin tomorrow afternoon. He emphasizes that you need not drink the toxin to receive the money. In fact, the money will already be in your bank account hours before the time for drinking it arrives if you succeed. All you have to do is intend at midnight tonight to drink the stuff tomorrow afternoon. You are perfectly free to change your mind after receiving the money and not drink the toxin. So, interpreting that is, can you intend to drink the toxin if you also intend to change your mind at a later time?
No. Because you're like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll drink it. But, like, you already know in the back of your head, like, I'm not going to drink it. So how do you fully commit yourself to intend it?
So you would never really be able to get that money because you never actually intend it.
Yeah. Damn it, I wanted $1 million.
Unless you actually go ahead and drink it.
And then you do die? And
then you're painfully ill for a day.
Oh, just a day?
But it's toxins, so you gotta... Will it only be a day? I mean... So...
I'd do it. I'd do it. Fuck it. I'd be sick for a day.
I mean, I think that's how lies became a thing.
It's pretty much the second... the second booster. I took that and I was sick for a day.
All right. So now we're going to get into a murder.
Finally!
This one's easier to... This is the murder of Tristan Brubach. Tristan Brubach was born on October 3rd, 1984, in Frankfurt to his parents, Iris and Bernd. Wasn't Bernd the name of B-E-R-N-D? Wasn't that the name of the dude in the...
The bulldozer,
in the cannibal?
Right? Oh, the cannibal. Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't it Bernd?
Yeah, I think
or
so.
Something? Iris, his mom, committed suicide in 1995.
Oh, another callback. Remember the mom that faked the daughter's illness
uh-huh.
for so long, and the daughter ended up killing the mom.
Yeah.
The daughter's
Gypsy Rose?
Yeah, the daughter's about to get out of jail. She wants to meet Taylor Swift. That was the headline. Gypsy Rose wants to meet Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift's like, "Do you even play football?" She's like, "I can't. I'm sick." Yeah. Oh, wait. No, I'm not.
She's like, "No, I'm only a football person now."
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
That whole case is still so fucked up to me. Like,
yeah.
It's hard to hold what she did against her. Like,
yeah. She was just mind fucked.
If you find out your entire life has been a lie, and basically has been taken from you.
Yeah. For one person's
That's a hard thing not to do some awful shit because of. So, Tristan's mom, Iris, she died. She committed suicide in 95, leaving Bernd to raise Tristan alone. Tristan grew up in Hochst and Unterliederbach, both suburban neighborhoods on the outer fringes of Frankfurt. He attended Walter Kolb Primary School in Hochst before going to secondary school in Sindlingen, another suburb of Frankfurt. Tristan was described as shy but very streetwise, spending a lot of his free time walking around his neighborhood with no specific purpose.
That's how you get streetwise. You gotta be out there on them streets.
Gotta be out there with no purpose. He was extremely fond of animals, despite his shyness in all other scenarios. He would regularly approach strangers of all ages who were walking their dogs so that he could enter into conversation with them about their pets. Is he a good boy? He's a good boy.
I love dogs, but like... I don't think I could approach somebody and just be like, oh, it's like friends. If I get a friend's house and they have a dog, that dog's not my best friend. I love that dog. I'm going to kidnap it maybe. But like people that bring dogs into stores and like there's people that like walking their dogs. Like I just, and like, that's why I don't want to get a dog. Cause I don't want to be walking dogs. So I was like, oh, look at your dog. What's his name?
I will approach that person and that dog. I can't help it. I did learn a lesson though, because I went to, I was in Marietta. We stopped at a gas station, and there was a guy sitting outside with his dog.
Uh-huh.
And okay, it's a dog, so I had to say hi. And as I reached down to pet it, he goes, so he like yells at me. He's like, "Don't touch her." And I went, "Ah, what?" And he's like, "She's not here for people to touch, and like she, whatever, she could bite you." And I was like, "Oh. I mean, can I try it?" Like, I was still like, right, but
okay,
I
have been warm, but I can still
right,
try,
right? She's a good girl. So, yeah, I will try to pet the dogs if I see them.
See, I'm the opposite. Like I said, if it's a friend's dog, you know.
Like, I don't want to talk to a single human.
Yeah.
But a dog, every dog I want to be friends with.
See, but then you got to talk to the humans that has that dog.
Like, yeah, but it's like...
Like that, like, fuck that guy.
We were, like, talking to them through the dog, which is cool. Yeah. We're like, oh, yeah, he's a good boy. He is a good boy. Yeah.
And you're like, hey, big boy, hey, big man, you got a dollar for me?
Yeah, like, yeah, you tell you, you tell him I don't. I got a dollar for the good boy.
I don't like to be called big man. No, I don't.
So, Tristan was last seen alive at Bruno Osch on Lodge, a park in front of Frankfurt-Hochst railway station at 3:20 p.m. on the day of his murder. His body was discovered by children walking home from school.
La, 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 la.
They returned to the school to tell their teachers, and the police were informed at 5:08 p.m. His body was in a pedestrian tunnel that runs alongside an underground section of the Liederbach River. The tunnel was known locally as the Liederbach Tunnel.
Oh, okay.
You know, of course it is. That's
someone took a leap there.
Brubach had been beaten unconscious and strangled, though the cause of his death was a long slash across his neck. Both testicles, as well as flesh from his buttocks and thighs, had been removed.
All right.
The murder weapon lay on a concrete block nearby. The murder had been seen from a distance by three teenagers. However, they did not realize at the time that what they were witnessing. Just, you know, it's normal to see somebody get their balls cut off.
Yeah.
These witnesses gave the police a description of the suspect, and a composite sketch was produced in March of 99, a year after the murder. Tristan's backpack was found in a forest in Niedernhausen, which was 15 miles from the crime scene. The backpack contained a Czech language road atlas of Germany, which is believed to not to have belonged to Tristan because he did not speak Czech and had no reasons or means to possess such an item. The police consequently expanded their inquiries to the Czech Republic and Slovakia, but no viable leads emerged. A large-scale fingerprinting operation began in 2022. All males aged between 15 and 45 from Hochst and Unterliederbach, as well as male commuters in that age bracket who had used the Frankfurt-Hochst railway station at the time of the murder, had been invited to submit fingerprint samples voluntarily. By 2014, 98.65% of 15 to 45-year-old males from Hochst and 92.95% of those from Unterliederbach had done so. It's a hell of a turnout, and that is a lot of fingerprints to go through.
Yeah.
On May 19, 2016, the Hessen State Office of Criminal Investigations in Wiesbaden announced that Manfred Seal was being looked into as a suspect. He died in 2014 at the age of 67. He lived a seemingly ordinary life, holding the same job for decades, raising a family, having no criminal record, and being an active and respected member of his local community, among other things, being in a jazz band.
Oh.
We all know who likes jazz.
Uh-huh, the Axeman of New Orleans.
That's right. However, after his death, his daughter was looking through...
Like in season three of American Horror Story.
His daughter was looking through his belongings in a rented storage facility and found human remains and diaries containing graphic descriptions and sketches of murder. The police are certain that Seal murdered at least 5 women, and perhaps as many as 9, primarily sex workers, drug addicts, and people suffering from mental illnesses between 71 and 2004. He is considered a potential suspect primarily because he and Brubach lived in the same area, rather than there being any evidence linking him to the murder. Brubach does not fit Seal's victim profile in terms of age and gender. However, Seal did exhibit sexual sadism in his presumed murders and kept the genitals of some of his victims.
Yeah, that was the first one. Maybe. He's
maybe.
Like, you know what? I don't think I want to kill
him. I don't think I need any more penises.
I got enough testicles.
I got enough balls. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I got 2 myself.
4 is just a lot.
You got so many.
In 2017, though, the press officer of the Frankfurt police announced that Seal had been excluded as a suspect in Brubach's murder. The prime suspect is a male aged between 20 and 30 with either a cleft lip or a large scar on his upper lip and of a generally unkempt appearance. This has yet to be solved,
though. With a 3-foot-3 mullet.
On April 7th, 1998, the day after Brubach's funeral, a man called the police to report that he was the murderer. He reported that he was at Hochst Railway Station and would wait there for the police to come and arrest him. When the police arrived, he was nowhere to be found. Parts of the call were made public and can be heard on YouTube. The caller has never been identified. The Frankfurt Main Prosecutor's Office is offering 15,000 euros for any information leading to conviction of Brubach's murderer. A private individual has added 5,000 euros to this, making the total reward sum 20,000 euros. Another private individual offered a time-limited 80,000 euro reward, but it expired in May 2016. So, still unsolved, but there is 20,000 euros out there for you if you know anything about it. If you know,
do I have to give back the testicles to get that money? Or, I mean, would the person who killed them...
You have to find the testicles, prove it. All right, up next is the tube sock killings, and we're not talking about what you do at night.
What do I do at night?
You kill tons of babies with your tube socks. In your tube socks.
My nephew, my sister called me.
Yeah?
She caught my nephew jerking off in the socks.
Really?
What a stupid name for a cat.
Dun-dun-tsh. The tube sock killer was active for just 4 months in the remote area of Mineral in Washington State. In this short window of time, he was presumed to have ended the lives of 4 victims, but this number could be vastly different if there are victims who have not been found yet. The first pair of victims, Steve Harkins and Ruth Cooper, were discovered on August 14, 1985. The couple had planned a weekend camping trip at Tule Lake, but they did not come back to work the following Monday, so their families reported them missing. Harkins' body was found first, still in a sleeping bag, suggesting that he was killed by a shot to the head in his sleep. Their pet dog was found shot to death as well, and that's the real crime here. But Cooper's body was still missing. Over a month later, Cooper's skull was found and positively identified using dental records. The rest of her body and belongings were found in the nearby area, and a tube sock was wrapped around her neck. Although this suggests strangulation, her cause of death was actually determined to be a shot to the abdomen. More than 2 months after these first murders, the second pair of victims were reported missing. Mike Reamer and his girlfriend Diana Robertson were on a camping trip near Nisqually River with their daughter Crystal. Same evening that they left, Crystal was found alive standing outside of a Kmart about 30 miles away.
Oh, I miss Kmarts.
Kmarts were good, especially back in the day.
Yeah.
Back when
Blue Light Special.
You get the ices and pretzels.
Popcorn and
stuff.
Yeah.
She was only 2 years old, so she was not verbal enough to provide much information, but she did say that, quote, "Mommy was in the trees." Because of the winter weather, searching for the missing couple was difficult, and their bodies were not discovered until over 2 months later. Robertson was found first, again with a tube sock tied around her neck by a driver near a road frequented by loggers, so the police brought in bloodhounds in an attempt to find Reamer. Despite their efforts, they could only find his pickup truck. One mystery of this case was that a manila envelope was found on the dashboard of the truck with the message, "I love you, Diana," written in Reamer's handwriting. There was also blood belonging to Robertson found in the car, making Reamer the new primary suspect. The most agreed-upon story at the time was that Reamer killed Robertson, drove his daughter to the store and abandoned her, and then fled. And because of the tube sock pattern, the police suspected that he was not only responsible for the death of Robertson, but for the first couple as well. This was also more convincing because he had a history of domestic violence, making the link to violent homicide more possible. A major development, decades later in March 2011, caused everything the police thought they knew to be once again under question. A partial skull belonging to Reamer was found within a mile radius of where Robinson's body was found in 1986. Because of the age of the skull, investigators are now under the impression that Reamer was another victim, but because only a small part of the remains were found, cause of death could not be determined. After decades, even with the advancements that technology has made, investigators of the case ended up being left with more questions than answers. Given the uncertainty around these cases, the notion that the tube sock killer was active beyond these two incidents is not far-fetched. For all we know, there could be other undiscovered victims buried in the Washington campgrounds. So if you see somebody with a random tube sock, don't hang around. All right.
I always run.
Murder of Ebby Stepich. Ebby Jane Stepich was an 18-year-old high school student in Little Rock, Arkansas, who was completing her senior year at Little Rock Central High School. Go Little Rock!
Ah, Bill Clinton!
She had previously attended a private school but transferred to a public school that year. Wanting independence from her parents, Stepich decided to move out of her family's home at the beginning of the school year, but was mainly staying with her grandparents and friends. On October 21st, 2015, Ebby missed school. On Friday, October 23rd, she attended a party at some point during that evening. The following day, October 24th, 2015, she arrived at her mother's home and informed her stepfather that she had been gang-raped by four individuals at the party and wanted to report the incident to authorities. She also alleged that the rape had been recorded on a cell phone. Later that evening, when her mother called, when her mother, Lori Jernigan, and stepfather attempted to reach her by phone, they got no response. Her stepfather suspected she had gone to retrieve the video of her assault. That evening, two brief calls lasting approximately 1 minute each replaced the Little Rock Police Department from her cell phone, though the police department would state that they had no record of receiving a report. Throughout the evening, cell phone records showed her sending text messages to several of the men she had implicated in her assault, threatening to report them to the police. Her last, she last had contact with her older brother, Trevor, around 2 p.m. on October 25th, 2015, in a phone call. Trevor described her as seeming disoriented during their conversation. She initially told him she was parked outside his house, but upon hanging up and walking out onto the street, he did not see her. When he called her back, she answered this time, telling him she was in her car but was unsure where she was parked. After she told him, quote, "I'm fucked up," the phone call ended. This was the last known contact anyone had with her. On October 27th,
"You got me fucked up!"
Her 2003 Volkswagen Passat was discovered by a security guard abandoned in a parking lot near a wooded area in Chalamont Park, a neighborhood park in West Little Rock. The security guard notified police and waited approximately 2 hours for an officer to arrive. However, none did.
Oh.
Why would they?
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
You gotta, like...
There's gonna be papers to fill out.
Drive there and probably get out of your car.
Not tonight.
Talk to somebody.
Not tonight.
Find a pin.
Mm-mm. Not
make
happening.
Sure it works.
What are we, the police?
Yeah. Yes, they are.
Eh, prove it. You gotta call us to prove it, and we ain't doing it.
Nope.
The next day, after seeing the vehicle still there as he did his rounds, he once again called and waited for the police, who did finally arrive an hour later. They stopped off for breakfast and discovered it belonged to Ebby. The car had an empty gas tank as well as a dead battery, and the key had been left in the ignition. Several searches of Chalamont Park were undertaken after the discovery of her car, though no additional evidence was found in the surrounding woods.
They said, "Man, we really wish you would have called last night.
That would have been good.
Yeah, if we could have been called here a little bit earlier."
So this is really on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should have called twice.
Per a 2017 report, the men Ebby had accused of rape had all spoken to the police, though no formal searches of their cell phones were done for the alleged video. Again.
What?
Why would you, like...
Oh, they have rights.
Right. Like, you know, well, they said they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Criminals wouldn't lie.
No.
In an attempt to bring publicity to her case, her mother and brother Trevor appeared on Dr. Phil in December 2017. the family offered a reward of $50,000 with information leading to
$50,000 discovery.
Around 10 a.m. on May 24, 2018, while performing another search of Chalamont Park, police discovered skeletal remains in a drainage pipe in the vicinity where her car had been discovered. These remains were subsequently confirmed to be those of Abby. Extensive searches for her at Chalamont Park had been held in the past. Margie Foley, a family friend and mother of one of Abby's best friends, told police she had smelled decomposition while doing a private search of the area and alerted the authorities. Upon the arrival of police,
they said, "What if it's just your upper lip?"
Oh,
we're the cops.
Hey, Doug, you hear what I told this woman? Upon the arrival of police at the scene, Foley claimed she was kind of dismissed by the officers, who told her that the park had been searched with recovery canines.
What are you, the smell police?
Who would have picked up on the scent of human decomposition and assured her it must just be an animal or something.
Yeah.
So, another one for the good guys.
And really, anytime you're pushed by a woman, step one, tell her to calm down.
That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Even if she's super calm.
Yeah.
Hey.
I need you to relax.
Calm down.
Calm down. There's no smells.
And then say ma'am. Ma'am. Calm down, ma'am.
Calm down.
Like I just said hi, Howard. Ma'am. I'm going to need you to calm down.
Pull out his gun.
All right. Up next are the Lake Bodum murders. On Saturday, June 4th, 1960, four Finnish teenagers had decided to camp along...
What'd they finish?
Oh, they finished making me say these names.
Okay.
They finished. Because this one, oh boy. They decided to camp along the shore of Lake Bodum, near the city of Espoo's Oita Manor. Myla Ermeli Björklund and Anja Tuliki Maki were both aged 15 at the time. Accompanying them were their boyfriends, Seppo Antero Boisman and Nils Wilhelm Gustafsson. Seppo.
Seppo.
Both okay. aged 18.
Sometime, I thought I had a solid if it was Zeppo, but Seppo, sometime, I don't know.
Definitely Zeppo. Sometime between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. during the early mornings of Sunday, June 5th, 1960, Maki, Björklund, and Boisman were all stabbed and bludgeoned to death by an unknown assailant. Gustafsson, the only survivor of the massacre, had fractured facial bones that appeared to confirm his story of being a victim. He stated afterwards that he had seen a glimpse of an attacker clothed in black with bright red eyes coming for them. At about 6 a.m., a group of boys birdwatching some distance away had reportedly seen the tent collapse and a blonde man walking away from the site. The bodies of the victims were discovered at 11 a.m. by a carpenter named Esko Oiva Johansson. He alerted the police, who arrived on the scene at noon. They only took them an hour. It took them an hour or two. The killer had not injured...
Well, they had to finish what they were doing.
The killer had not injured the victims from inside the tent, but instead had attacked the occupants from outside with a knife and an unidentified blunt instrument, probably a rock, through the sides of the tent. That would fucking suck.
Yeah.
You're just chilling in your tent and then stab.
Rock, hit.
Yeah, like, what the fuck is happening? The killer had taken several items.
That's some Jason Voorhees shit.
Yeah, it is. Maybe this was who did this. The killer had taken several items which detectives found puzzling, including the keys to the victims' motorcycles, which themselves had been left behind. Gustafsson's shoes were partially hidden approximately 500 meters from the murder site. The police did not cordon off the site, nor record the details of the scene, because...
It's so much work, dude! Like, their shit was over in a half hour.
Gotta get home.
Gotta get home, they gotta get their bras off, and chill.
Those tits hang. And almost immediately allowed a crowd of police officers and other people to trample around and disturb the evidence. Always great police work.
Yeah.
The mistake was further exacerbated by calling in soldiers to assist with the search around the lake for missing items. Björklund, Gustafsson's girlfriend, was found undressed from the waist down and was lying on top of the tent and had suffered the most injuries out of all the victims. She was stabbed multiple times after her death, whilst the other two teenagers were slain with less brutality. Gustafsson was also found lying on top of the tent. This one was very similar to the, there's a very famous, incident that, I can see it in my head, the Dotloff Pass incident, where, some hikers were brutally murdered or died brutal deaths, and nobody knows how or what. All right. Next up is death of Dwayne McCorkendale.
Dwayne
McCorkendale.
Dwayne the Pebble McCorkendale.
On November 12th, 1988, at a highway rest stop at mile marker 31 of the Turner Turnpike in Chandler, Oklahoma, an anonymous caller reported seeing the body of a man lying beside a phone booth.
That's who West Virginia's playing tonight, Oklahoma.
At approximately 8 p.m., the Oklahoma Highway Patrol arrived on the scene. The man had been murdered. Coins had been scattered about his body. The dead man was Dwayne McCorkendale, a 27-year-old truck driver and father of twin girls from Kansas City, Kansas. His truck was parked nearby. He had been killed by a single shotgun blast fired at close range into his back with a 12-gauge shotgun. The apparent motive was robbery. Dwayne's wife, Joan, says that if he had been killed in an accident, she could have handled it a lot better. She feels that it was very ironic that he was killed for money when the last thing a trucker will do is carry much money for that very reason. Every day, thousands of big rigs travel.
Truckers always seem pretty cool, too. I'm sure the trucker probably would have just helped him. The guy needed help with something? Like, yeah, here
most likely. That evening, Dwayne entered the turnpike and was given a ticket with a time on it. Through that ticket, investigators were able to determine that he made no other stops. He drove directly from the turnpike gate to the rest area. Other truckers reported that at approximately 5:45 p.m., Dwayne told them he was stopping at the Chandler rest stop to call his wife. There's a theory that someone had been listening to Dwayne on CB radio and actually followed him into the rest area. It's also possible that the person was already there waiting for him. The belief is that Dwayne walked up to the phone booth. He pulled out some change and counted it in his hands. There was some change found because of the change found at the base of his booth. He was then shot in the back and killed as he stepped up to make his call. The shot killed him instantly, so he was dead before he hit the ground. Then, after the shot, the killer checked him to see if he had any more money on him. Investigators determined that the only items that were missing were Dwayne's keys and wallet. They estimate that the killer's take was no more than $25.
Which in 1980 is probably like $60
like
now.
Probably about now,
$40 now. Still not worth it. Poor fella.
So still no leads on that one either. Just there is a $10,000 reward out there for any information on his death. But just to murder somebody for, $25, that's insane. All right, second to last one we got here.
Drugs were involved.
Is the unsolved mystery of the Zaragoza Goblin.
The Zaragoza, say it again?
The Zaragoza Goblin.
Zaragoza Goblin?
Zaragoza Goblin.
Zaragoza Goblin.
Zaragoza Goblin.
Zaragoza Goblin.
The madness began on September 27th, 1934, in the second floor home of the Palazon family.
Zaragoza Goblin.
Who lived in an apartment building on what was then known as Gachon Gotor Street. It was on that date that the family first began hearing some strange screams, laughter, and voices that seemed to come from the walls of their kitchen. Wonder if this was our buddy, our what was it, little animal that talked in our last episode?
That was 3 weeks ago. I can't be.
There was some kind of little animal that talked. Anyways, the chimney connected to many other units in the building before escaping to the roof, so the logic was that it must have been coming from someone in the building. The roof itself was taller than any around it and too isolated to access easily. The voice was male, but it did not seem to just be in the heads of the Palazon family either. When the Palazons asked their neighbor for help, they too would hear the voice when they came to the apartment, and word started to spread about the peculiar haunting in their house. While most believe that the sounds were some kind of prank, both the practical observers and those who truly believe that the voice was of supernatural origin started thinking of the presence as a elf or goblin. The beings come from Latin America folklore and are analogous to fairies, sprites, or, well, goblins in Western folklore. They are natural spirits that can have a range of traits or significance ranging from being benevolent like pixies to mischievous boggarts, depending on the tale. As it would turn out, this one was closer to a mischievous little goblin. With the whole building aware of the voice coming from the supposed stove goblin, local interest in the house began to grow. Curious onlookers would crowd around outside the house to try and catch a snippet of the spirit's conversation. In the months since the voice began appearing, it was said to both ask and answer questions. It took a peculiar interest in the Palazon's young maid, Pasquala Alcho.
I bet it did.
The voice would call out her name and then laugh maniacally. Finally, with the family unable to root out the source of the disturbance or cope with its presence any longer, the Palazons went to the police for help in mid-November of 1934. It is unknown whether the police would have gotten involved had local interest in the elf had not been beginning to take on a tenor of hysteria. Like, I'm sure if the police can't be bothered for a murder,
yeah,
if they hear goblin, they're like, no.
We gotta get our elf department on.
We don't look up from our desk for a goblin. The police did investigate.
Like, if it was like three goblins stacked on top of each other wearing a trench coat,
maybe
they might get off.
They could sneak into an R-rated movie.
Yeah, we can't know.
So no answers were ever found what this could be. Suddenly, though, as more and more people began showing up to listen to the voices, it suddenly went quiet. After 2 days of silence, the local magistrate, who was eager to restore logic and order to the city, deemed the case to simply be an anomaly, and the police withdrew. However, things were far from over. Just 2 days after it had stopped all communication, the voice surprised a group of neighbors and visitors by suddenly exclaiming, "Cowards, cowards, cowards, here I am." And just like that, the goblin was back. The police returned.
"Show yourself, goblin. You're going to call me a coward. Come on out. Let me see your goblin ass."
The police returned, but the Palazon family had had enough and moved away. The voice would taunt police, saying, "I am coming, I am coming." I don't know if I talk like that. Although it never appeared. Interest in this area.
It was like, "Oh, God, I'm coming. I'm coming."
It was a little edger goblin. interest in the Zaragoza goblin was reaching a fever pitch. A Barcelona radio station tried to get someone to put a microphone in the room so they could broadcast the voice, and members of Scotland Yard were planning trips out to the apartment to try and solve the case. By November 30th, the governor of Zaragoza had had enough and called an end to all of the goblinoid silliness, asking the people to essentially settle down and help find out who the prankster was.
Yeah, they're not going to tolerate this.
On December 4th,
tolerate the intolerable.
You get goblins.
Tolerating goblins. Tolerance to intolerable tolerance.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's how we get eggnog.
Mm, yes, goblin semen is eggnog.
Oh.
Voice of that.
Okay.
On December 4th, the governor issued
a statement
that the perpetrator of the voice was none other than the young maid herself, Pasquala.
Ah!
Who he said had been performing the voice something he called unconscious ventriloquism. Understandably, Pasquala herself claimed to be completely unaware that she was a prankster, throwing her voice while in some sort of fugue state. The official who had been presiding over the investigations claimed to have seen it himself, vaguely explaining that it was the result of a psychic phenomenon produced only in certain circumstances. So it sounds like that's probably not what was happening, and they were just like, no. It's this thing. We're not going to explain it.
She doesn't know. She doesn't remember. We're not talking about it.
All right, and last... This is what this all was leading to.
Okay.
Of course it was.
All right.
What else could it possibly be? Do you have any guesses?
Mothman.
It does have man in it. You're pretty close.
Okay.
Number 50. Batman fights Dracula.
What?
Batman fights...
Which Batman? Like Adam West? Adam West wouldn't have a chance against Dracula. I would like to think Michael Keaton could... probably handle himself pretty well. George Clooney, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, George Clooney.
George Clooney is Batman or Dracula.
So Batman fights Dracula, or Dracula, is a 1967 Filipino superhero film directed by Leody M.
Is
Diaz.
Is this going to be like the Popeye that has porn in it?
It's kind of.
Okay.
And scripted by Bert Mendoza. The film, which is not authorized by DC, is thought to be lost. The story concerned the mad scientist named Dr. Zorba, who, after repeatedly being defeated by Batman, finds a way to resurrect Count Dracula, control him, and make him even stronger, rendering him invincible towards traditional ways of killing him. Dracula sneaks into the Batcave and attacks Batman.
First of all, he has to be invited.
Well, no, because he made him stronger, so none of the rules apply anymore.
No, that rule still applies.
Not if Count Zorba's involved.
Damn it, Cash, it implies!
Dr. Zorba.
Okay.
Batman attempts to use holy water and a cross to injure the vampire.
Holy water, Batman!
But due to Zorba's interference, they have no effect.
Oh, man.
Dracula throws Batman through a wall and then flees for some reason.
Oh.
He has him.
That's it.
He flees, though.
I threw him through a wall. My work is
But Batman here. Was knocked out. While the unconscious Batman is found by his butler, Turco, a character based on Alfred Pennyworth, He tends to the crime fighter's wounds and then calls for Batman's girlfriend and sidekick to aid in tracking down his attacker. After tracking down Zorba at his underground fortress, Reuben, who is supposed to be Robin,
Reuben!
And the beautiful Marita, that's his girlfriend, that's okay. Batman's girlfriend, managed to
kill... Bat person? How can they even call him Batman?
They managed to kill the evil Dr. Zorba.
There's like a space between them, it's Batman.
Batman. To kill the evil doctor by turning the vampire against him. The vampire then is investigated by a recovering Batman within a cage in the Batcave, and the film ends with Batman lecturing Dracula about justice. I'm sad that we don't get to see this masterpiece.
I thought you had it on VHS. That's what all this is.
This is our new grail. This is what we need to look for.
Batman versus Dracula with Reuben.
I love that it ends with Batman just being like, "Now Dracula."
It ends with an episode of Full House. No kids. I know that blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, they always got to have, like, a talk at the end to just summarize everything.
But I'm glad Zorba dies, you know? Yeah. I'm glad he gets murdered by Dracula. Well, that's true justice right there.
That's what the butler does. He puts himself, you know, in harm's way to save...
Well, the butler did nothing.
Bryce. I thought that was the butler.
Mm-mm, Reuben. Reuben and Marita.
I thought Reuben was the knockoff Robin.
Yeah. The knockoff Robin and Marita go and turn Dracula against Count Zorba, or Dr. Zorba.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The butler just kind of helps Batman.
I was thinking Zorba was...
His name is like Turco or something.
Turco, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, that's the iceberg.
Wow.
50 things.
Felt like 100.
Felt like 3,000.
I tolerated it.
So, yeah, and we proved the paradox that the tolerant cannot be intolerant of the intolerant.
No.
Because I'm tolerant of
you. I won't tolerate that.
Wait, I tolerate you.
You do. I don't know how you do it.
For now.
I don't know how you've done it.
Well, I'm working on getting Dracula to do my bidding.
All right.
So as soon as I do, you better get yourself a damn good butler.
Oh, I'm not going to let him in.
Well,
he's powerful.
All right. Well, next we'll be back with just one story.
Good.
Just a story.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Probably.
But, yeah, so go do all the stuff, you know, share all the stuff. Follow us on TikTok and YouTube. Smash that like button. Enjoy the, it's getting cold, guys.
Yeah.
Getting cold. If they're cold, if you're cold, they're cold.
Bring them in.
Bring them in.
I used your joke about how hot girl summer is gone. Now it's fat fuck fall.
Yeah.
My time to shine.
Yeah.
Which is different than the normal glisten of sweat I have. I think he gave me that add-on at the end.
Yeah.
They used it. They laughed.
Good.
They're like, we just want to fuck ourselves.
Yeah. Give me that big old arm thing.
Oh, my God.
I want to put it in my butt. And it's going to come out my mouth.
That's the noise you make. Oh, it's long enough.
Yeah.
It's long enough.
I had it.
I got it at the house. I'll bring it over next time.
All right, awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Cool.
It'll be our third.
See if you can tolerate it.
It'll be our guest.
Yeah.
All right. Till then. Dude, I don't know.
Keep your heads up, follow your dreams, and stay mediocre.
Bye.
Yeah.